Regardless of whether or not you have the view that comprehends emptiness, all meditation in which your mind is focused on not thinking about anything and on not analyzing anything is concentration emptiness. I reply, in that case you would be forced to accept that even the concentrations along the way to meditative serenity mentioned previously in passages from Asanga's cervical levels are concentrations on emptiness. For in those two, when settled in concentration, apart from a few occasions of monitoring and so on, when the strength of mindfulness and vigilance has decreased, you sustain the meditation without the slightest discursive thought of this is this or this is not this. Therefore, the sutra unraveling the intended meaning says that the concentrations for achieving serenity attend to an image that is without discursive thought. Furthermore, within the context of serenity and sight, Asanga's cervical levels refers to serenity in this way. At that time, this concentration attends to an image without discursive thought, and it exclusively focuses mindfulness one-pointedly upon the object. It does not examine it, nor classify it, nor investigate it, nor ponder it, nor analyze it. And the same text states, when you achieve the mind of serenity in this way, signs, thoughts or secondary afflictions may appear, manifest or become the object. Because of forgetfulness or the fault of lack of habituation, do not fall immediately under the influence of the faults that you have previously observed, and neither recall them nor pay attention to them. In this way, because you are neither being mindful of this object nor attending to it, it dissolves, and when it is dispelled, you will settle in the absence of the appearance of these obstructions. This is stated in a passage concerning the practice of meditative serenity alone. In passages concerning the practice of serenity, the authoritative treatises speak only of meditation that is focused without analytical activity. So to knowledgeable people, the contention that all meditation without any discursive thought at all constitutes the practice of meditation on emptiness is laughable. In particular, this citation from Asanga's cervical levels also perfectly refutes the assertion that all references to meditation with no mindfulness or attention is meditation on emptiness. Furthermore, Kamala Shila's first stage of meditation says the nature of serenity is nothing more than a one-pointed mind. This is the general characteristic of all meditative serenity. Ratnakara Shanji's instructions for the perfection of wisdom also states, focusing on the mind which is perceiving various things, reject mental conservation and cultivate serenity. Mental conversation is the discursive thought. This is this. Moreover, after earlier citing numerous sutras and treatises by the great trailblazers, including the discussion in the Cloud of Jewel Sutra concerning serenity as mental one-pointedness, I have already explained numerous times that serenity entails no discursive thought whatsoever. Therefore, there is non-discursive awareness that meditates on emptiness, as well as non-discursive awareness that lacks even the slightest cognition of emptiness. So do not regard every occurrence of bliss, clarity and non-discursive awareness as meditation on emptiness. These comments disclose only a portion of this subject. So strive diligently and understand the ways of accomplishing serenity insight as elucidated by Maitreya, Asanga and so on. Now, if you fail to do so, you will mistake certain concentrations that are focused non-discursively. But without even... But without even reaching serenity for the insight which cuts the root of cycle existence. And after you have arrogantly held this to be an awareness without a truly existent object, as time goes by, you will certainly deceive yourself and others. The treatises of authoritative scholars and adepts assert that when you newly practice serenity, you exclusively focus your attention non-discursively in stabilizing meditation. And when you first practice insight, you meditate by means of analysis with discerning wisdom. Once you hold that all thought consists of grasping to true existence and discard it altogether, your understanding is turned directly away from the authoritative treatises, and you do not reach an errorless view of selflessness. Nevertheless, the notion that the absence of thought constitutes meditation on the profound object of insight is simply the unadulterated system of the Chinese master Huashang. Take a careful look at Kamala Shila's three stages of meditation and you will understand. Next is serenity as part of the path. A general presentation of the way to proceed along the path on the basis of meditative state serenity. Question: should you simply sustain a non-discursive awareness characterized by clarity, non-discursiveness, etc., by achieving attention, entering non-discursive concentration as explained previously? So the key question that is being answered here is, after developing a clear process of understanding the meditation on one-pointedness, shall we continue to do just that or do something else? This is being answered here, saying that your purpose of developing one-pointed meditation is to gradually develop true insight into ultimate reality. So in the answer it says, producing such concentration in your mind stream is for the purpose of generating insight that overcomes afflictions. Hence, if you do not generate insight on the basis of this concentration, you will be unable to eliminate even the afflictions of the desire realm. No matter how much you grow accustomed to that concentration, in that case, what need is there even to mention eliminating all afflictions? Therefore, cultivate insight. Furthermore, there are two kinds of insight. The insight proceeding by the mundane path, which eliminates manifest afflictions, and the insight proceeding by the supramundane path, which eradicates the seeds of affliction. There is no means of proceeding on a higher path other than these two. Therefore, one who has achieved meditative serenity or attention may cultivate either the insight of the mundane path or the insight that proceeds by the supramundane path. Whichever you wish to cultivate, you must frequently cultivate the serenity achieved previously, and when you practice in this way, buoyancy and mental one-pointedness greatly increase, and serenity also becomes much more stable. Moreover, you become knowledgeable about the science of serenity insight, and thereafter you strive at whichever of the two paths you want. Mundane insight consists of meditation bearing the aspects of calmness and coarseness, in which observe the coarseness of the lower levels and the calmness of the higher levels. Supramundane insight, as stated in the Charvaka levels, consists of meditation which observes the 16 aspects of the Four Noble Truths, including impermanence, so on. Principally, you cultivate the view which is the knowledge of the selflessness of the person. Question: what kind of person achieves the attention of serenity explained previously and does not proceed by the supramundane path in that lifetime but proceeds by the mundane path? Reply: the Charvaka level states, what persons proceed in this life solely by the mundane path and not by the supramundane path? There are the following four types of persons. 1. All those who are not Buddhists. 2. Those who adhere to this Buddhist teaching, but while they are practiced serenity well, are of dull faculties. 3. Similarly, those who are of sharp faculties, but whose roots of virtue have not matured. And 4. Bodhisattvas who wish to achieve enlightenment in the future, but not in this life. In that regard, all non-Buddhist yogis who have achieved the meditative serenity explained earlier do not use discerning wisdom to sustain an analysis of the selflessness of the person, for they are not drawn to selflessness. Therefore, they either sustain non-discursive meditative serenity alone, or they cultivate just insight bearing the aspects of calmness and coarseness. In this way, they proceed solely by the mundane path. If you are a practitioner of this teaching, a Buddhist, but have dull faculties and have previously been deeply habituated to the stabilizing meditation of serenity alone, you will not be interested in meditation which investigates the meaning of selflessness with discerning wisdom. Or even if you are interested due to an inability to understand the meaning of selflessness, you will proceed in this life solely by the mundane path. This is because you either sustain the stability of serenity alone, or you cultivate just the insight bearing the aspects of calmness and coarseness. Even if you are a Buddhist of sharp faculties who has comprehended the meaning of selflessness, if your roots of virtue for perceptually knowing the truth have not matured, in this life you will still be unable to generate the supermundane, undefiled, noble path. In this case, it is said that you will proceed by the mundane path alone, but not that you are unable to cultivate insight focused on selflessness. Consider bodhisattvas who are bound to one more birth before Buddhahood, and who during their next lifetime, their final rebirth in cycle existence, will produce in their mind streams the four paths, beginning with the path of preparation. While they are still bound to one more birth, they are unable to generate the noble path. So it is said that in this lifetime, they proceed by the mundane path, but not that they fail to know the meaning of selflessness, as Vasubandhu states. This accords with the way of achieving Buddhahood taught in the Hinayana treatises, but it is not the Mahayana interpretation of the Noble Master Asanga. Therefore, non-Buddhists who eliminate manifest afflictions by meditating on the path bearing the aspects of calmness and coarseness, as well as Buddhists who radically eliminate afflictions by meditating on the meaning of selflessness, must first of all achieve the concentration of meditative serenity explained earlier. So the serenity explained above is needed by non-Buddhist and Buddhist yogis as the basis for eliminating afflictions. Furthermore, yogis of either the Mahayana or the Hinayana must also achieve this concentration. And even among the Mahayana practitioners, all yogis of both the mantra and perfection vehicles must also achieve meditative serenity. So this serenity is extremely important as the basis for proceeding along the paths of calm abiding. Moreover, the serenity explained in the Tantric texts contains certain differences in methods for generating concentration and in objects of meditation, such as focusing on a divine form, on hand implements of the chosen deity, or on syllables. But apart from those, they are entirely alike in terms of the need to eliminate the five faults of concentration, including laziness and so on, in terms of the means of cultivating their antidotes such as mindfulness and vigilance and so on, and in terms of the achievement of the nine mental states and the ensuing occurrence of plans, etc. So this concentration is very widespread. With this in mind, the sutra enabling the thought states that all Mahayana Hinayana concentrations are included within the concentrations of serenity and insight. And thus you who wish to be skilled in concentration should become skilled in serenity insight. Although there are many purposes for developing this concentration, the attention of serenity, the chief purpose is for the sake of developing the knowledge of insight. Moreover, in terms of insight, there are two kinds. One, that which bears the aspects of calmness and coarseness, which eliminates only manifest afflictions, and which is common to Buddhists and non-Buddhists. And two, that which is common to Buddhists, both Mahayana practitioners and Hinayana practitioners. There is insight bearing the aspect of the reality of selflessness, which utterly eliminates the seeds of the afflictions. This last is a unique quality of Buddhists. The former is a luxury, not something indispensable, while the latter is an indispensable element. So those aspiring for freedom should produce the insight that comprehends the reality of selflessness. Furthermore, even if you do not achieve the higher meditative stabilizations of the formed realm or the meditative absorptions of the formless realm, but do achieve the serenity explained previously, which is included in the level of access to the first meditative stabilization, then you can achieve liberation, freedom from all the fetters of cyclic existence by cultivating insight based on the serenity. By means of mundane insight developed on the basis of the serenity explained earlier, you can achieve the mind of the peak of cyclic existence, which has eliminated all of the manifest afflictions of the formless level of nothingness and below. But if you do not know the reality of selflessness and meditate upon it, you will not be liberated from cycle existence, as Matrichida's praise that falls short says. Therefore, the meditative serenity that serves as the basis for the insight that reaches the noble paths of all stream interests and one's returners is the serenity explained earlier, which is included in the access to the first meditative stabilization. Similarly, know that all higher arhats who simultaneously illuminate the afflictions becomes arhats by cultivating insight on the basis of the meditative serenity explained earlier. If you do not first establish in your mind stream the concentration of serenity explained previously, it's not possible for the actual knowledge of the insight, which is focused on either the real nature or the diversity of all phenomena, to arise. This will be discussed later on. Therefore, while yogis in the highest yoga tantra tradition may not develop the insight bearing the aspects of calmness and coarseness, which focuses on the diversity of all phenomena, or the serenity generated by this insight, they must develop serenity. Moreover, the point at which serenity first arises in terms of the stage of generation and the stage of completion is during the first of these two. In summary, you must first develop serenity, and then on this basis you may proceed on a graduated path up to the peak of cyclic existence by means of insight bearing the aspects of calmness and coarseness, or you may proceed along the five paths of liberation or omniscience by means of insight bearing the aspect of the reality of selflessness. This constitutes the general seal of the Concourse teachings, so no yogi can depart from it. So this is a great summary. The preceding is a general presentation of the way to proceed from high to higher paths on the basis of meditative serenity. Next is a specific presentation of the way to proceed along the mundane path. Here there are two sections. First is the need to achieve meditative serenity before proceeding on the path bearing the aspects of calmness and coarseness. One who cultivates the path bearing the aspects of calmness and coarseness by way of discernment of characteristics must first achieve the meditative serenity explained earlier, as the ornament of Mahayana Sutra says. So here, when you cultivate the path that sees the higher realms as having the aspect of calmness and the lower realms having the aspect of coarseness, so therefore it is important to know what are the characteristics of the higher paths, what are the characteristics of the lower paths, and so forth. This states that one who has achieved the previously explained ninth mental state together with plans increases the concentration and thereby achieves actual meditative stabilization. Moreover, from the time of the ninth mental state up until you achieve the attention, you are said to attain a beginner at attention. Once you have achieved the intention of the discernment of characteristics and you cultivate it out of a desire to purify afflictions, you are said to attain a beginner at purifying afflictions. So one who cultivates the discernment of characteristics first achieves attention, as Charvaka level states. Also, at the beginning of the fourth section, it is said that you cultivate the mundane and supramundane paths of detachment after you have achieved attention, serenity. This very extensive explanation in the cervical levels of the process of eliminating afflictions by first completing the serenity explained above and then achieving mundane and supramundane insight does not clearly appear in other treatises on knowledge. Former scholars who were learned in the earlier, higher and lower texts on knowledge and also have not clearly articulated this process of eliminating afflictions on the basis of the first accomplishing one-pointed serenity. Therefore, if you have not understood well this explanation in the Charvaka levels, you might have the following mistaken idea. The lowest stage of the path of the meditative stabilizations of the form realm and the meditative absorptions of the formless realm is the access to the first stabilization. And the first of the six types of attention explained with respect to this is the discernment of characteristics. Therefore, the discernment of characteristics is a state of mind at the beginning of the access. It's very incorrect to hold such a view for these reasons. One, without achieving serenity, you have no way to produce access to the first meditative stabilization. Two, if you do not achieve this access, you will not achieve serenity. And three, since discernment of characteristics consists of analytical meditation, By cultivating it, you will not be able to nearly accomplish the serenity that you have not achieved earlier. According to the quotation from the level of yogi beats cited earlier, there is no pliancy in one pointedness within the desire realm, and the sutra unraveling the thought and so on state that if you do not achieve pliancy, you will not accomplish serenity. Thus, if you do not achieve the first access state, you will not achieve serenity. Therefore, the first of the six types of attention of the first access state is the entrance to cultivating the insight, including in the access state. But it is not right at the beginning of the first access state, for it must be preceded by the serenity that is included in the access state. All states of concentration prior to the achievement of the concentrations included in the first access state are solely mental one-pointedness in the desire realm. So if you adhere to the explanations in the classic texts, there are very few who achieve even serenity, let alone insight. On the basis of meditative serenity, the way to freedom from attachment to the desire realm. Once you have become familiar with just the meditative serenity explained earlier, which bears the many attributes of clarity, non-discursive awareness, etc., if you do not cultivate either of the two kinds of insight, you will not be able to suspend even the manifest afflictions of the desire realm. In that case, what need is there to mention eliminating the seeds of afflictions and cognitive obscurations? Therefore, if you wish to achieve the first stabilization, which is free of attachment to the desire realm, cultivate insight on the basis of that serenity, calm. Well, why does this not contradict the earlier statement that if you become accustomed to serenity alone, you will suppress manifest afflictions? Answer: there is no problem, for the earlier explanation subsumed mundane insight under the category of meditative serenity, but this explanation refers to the serenity that is included in the first access state and that precedes both types of insight. Moreover, with respect to the insight that accomplishes freedom from attachment, there are two types of freeing yourself, one by means of insight bearing the aspect of the truths, and the other by the insight that bears the aspects of calmness and coarseness. This present discussion is a presentation of the way to accomplish freedom from attachment by way of the latter of these two paths. With regard to this, the persons who cultivate it are both non-Buddhists who utterly lack the view of selflessness and followers of this teaching Buddhists who have the view of selflessness. But however path they cultivate in order to eliminate the afflictions accords with the teachings of the Sarvaka levels. So for the sake of freedom from the desire realm, diligent yogis use the seven types of attention and subsequently achieve their freedom. The seven types of attention are the attention of 1, the discernment of characteristics, 2, arisal from belief, 3, isolation, 4, delight or withdrawal, 5, analysis, 6, final application, and 7, the result of final application. Among those, the final one is the attention at the time of entering the actual state of meditative stabilization upon being freed from attachment to the desire realm. So this is what is to be accomplished, while the former six are what accomplishes it. Question: if in this case you are not eliminating the afflictions through meditating on the meaning of selflessness, then what kind of thing are you establishing and then meditating on to eliminate the afflictions? Reply: although other manifest afflictions of the desired realm are eliminated with this path bearing the aspects of calmness and coarseness, the phrase to free yourself from attachment to the desired realm refers solely to eliminating attachment by way of its antidote. Moreover, attachment refers here to the yearning for and attachment to the five sensory objects of the desired realm. This antidote to this is to regard sensory objects or disadvantages in a multitude of ways, but thus adhering to the opposites of the mode of apprehension of attachment and then accustoming yourself to it, you become free from attachment to the desired realm. Furthermore, you may have the firm certainty of the discernment of characteristics and unmistaken discernment of the faults of the desired realm and the good qualities of the first meditative stabilization. Nevertheless, if you have not already accomplished serenity, you will not be able to eliminate afflictions, no matter how familiar you become with distinguishing between those faults and good qualities. Moreover, even if you have achieved serenity, if you do not analyze with discernment, however much you cultivate serenity, you will not be able to eliminate afflictions, Thus you must eliminate them by way of cultivating both serenity and insight. This is the procedure for every elimination of afflictions. In that case, the seven types of attention are described as follows. 1. The knowledge of characteristics in which one distinguishes between the faults and advantages of the lower and higher levels, entails the integration of study and reflection by means of mental states arisen from study on some occasions and those arisen from reflection on other occasions. 2. By familiarizing yourself in this way, you will exclusively believe in the objects of calmness and coarseness by way of meditation that transcends study and reflection, and this is the attention arisen from belief. In this regard, the Sarvaka level states, you focusing on that very sign, you cultivate serenity inside. And even in that passage, in the passage concerning the sixth attention, there is reference to cultivating serenity inside. The passage on the first attention speaks of focusing on the six elements, including the meaning, and in other passages this focusing is frequently referred to as insight. Hence, even though this does not entail cultivating the view of selflessness, it is insight. Thus, in the context of this type of attention, you eliminate afflictions after you have meditated by way of both serenity and insight. Here is how you cultivate the two. You cultivate insight by repeatedly analyzing the distinct objects of calmness and coarseness, and at the conclusion of this analysis, you cultivate serenity by one-pointedly focusing on these objects of calmness and coarseness. The second and first types of attention is such meditation. In such meditation are the antidotes of disillusionment. When on the basis of familiarizing yourself with the alternating cultivation of serenity inside, in that way you give rise to the antidote to the great afflictions of the desire realm. This is called isolated attention. Further, the attention of delight on withdrawal is when you are able to eliminate middling afflictions by means of the alternating cultivation of serenity and insight. 5. Then when you see that the desire realms, afflictions that obstruct your endeavors in virtue are not cultivated either while abiding in concentration or when you have risen from it, do not have the coarse thought, now I have eliminated the afflictions, rather analyze it, is the attachment of sensual attraction not being cultivated. Are not being activated while I am not free of it? Or is it not activated after I have been freed from it? Then in order to test this, watch attachment arise when you focus on a very beautiful object of attachment. Thereafter, your interest in meditation for the sake of eliminating the attachment is analytical attention. This gets rid of the conceit of thinking that you have eliminated that which has not been eliminated. And then again, you both analytically discriminate the objects of calmness and coarseness as before and focus one-pointedly at the conclusion of the analysis. The attention of final application is when by meditating in this way you give rise to the antidote to the small afflictions of the desire realm. The third, fourth and sixth types of attention and antidotes that eliminate afflictions. Thus, when you have eliminated the small afflictions, you have overcome all the manifest afflictions of the desire realm, and for the time being they are not activated in the slightest degree. But you have not completely destroyed the seeds of those afflictions. By this means you are freed from attachment to states up to nothingness. But since you are unable to stop even this manifest afflictions of the peak of cycle existence, you cannot transcend the cycle of existence. However, on the basis of mental stabilization, you also achieve the five kinds of super knowledges, but I shall not discuss them due to fear of too many words. Since this is elaborated upon in Asanga's Sarvaka levels, look there. Nowadays, there is no one who uses these methods to accomplish the actual mental stabilizations and so on, so there is no one to lead you astray. Nevertheless, if you generate an understanding that is not confined to a mere general verbal description of them, it is very helpful for avoiding the pitfalls of concentrations other than this. Such concentrations of the four meditative stabilization of the form realm and the four meditative absorptions of the formless realm, as well as the five kinds of super knowledge, are shared with non-Buddhists. So even if you achieve such extraordinary concentrations, so it's really becoming very dark. Where is tea? Now it seems better that we should get our warm blankets and get a peaceful sound sleep. Such concentrations of the four material stabilizations of the form realm and the four material reservations of the formless realm, as well as the the five kinds of super knowledge are shared with non-Buddhists. So even if you achieve such extraordinary concentrations, not only will you not be liberated from the cycle of existence by this alone, they even bind you to the cycle of existence. Therefore, seek descending insight and the way of selflessness, and do not be satisfied with serenity alone. Among the stages of the path of a person of great capacity, this concludes the explanation of how those who are training in the deeds of Bodhisattvas train in serenity, which is meditative stabilization. If anyone has lost an eyeglass with yellow frame, a small eyeglass with yellow frame, why insight is needed, how to train in insight. As I have explained, meditative serenity has the features of 1. Non-discursiveness, 2. Clarity, 3. Benefit, that is delight and bliss. However, you should not be satisfied with just this. Rather, developing the wisdom that properly determines the meaning of reality, you must cultivate insight. As I told you earlier, that as far as the question of achieving just one-pointed meditation is concerned, there are many non-Buddhist practitioners who have achieved such strong one-pointed meditation. Even though I myself did not meet any person, but it really seems that there are persons who have achieved such strong one-pointed meditation and who has some interesting experiences. So otherwise, since mere concentration is something Buddhists have in common even with non-Buddhists, its cultivation, as with non-Buddhist paths, will not get rid of the seeds of the afflictions, hence it will not free you from cycle existence, as Kamala Shila's first stage of meditation says. Although worldly persons cultivate concentration, they do not destroy the notion of the self. Afflictions return and disturb them, as they did Udarak, who cultivated concentration in this way. So meaning that so long as you have not removed the grasping of the self, so long as you have not removed the grasping of the self, your afflictions again will return and they will disturb you. The phrase, although worldly persons cultivate concentration, means that worldly persons cultivate a concentration with features such as non-discursiveness and clarity as explained above. The line, they do not destroy the notion of the self, means that despite cultivating the concentration, they cannot eliminate the conception of self. Afflictions written and disturb them indicates that worldly persons will still produce afflictions because they have not eliminated the conception of self. What kind of meditation leads to liberation? This is stated in the King of Concentration Sutra. If you analytically discern the lack of self in phenomena, meaning that if you analytically judge the nature of all phenomena and see that they have no inherent or independent existence, and if you cultivate that analysis in meditation, this will cause the result attainment of nirvana. And there is no peace through any other means. There is no peace through any other means that the peace, nirvana, is actualized through through the wisdom realizing selflessness, and there is no other path. So it is this realization of the meaning of selflessness that you attain Nirvana. And it is not possible to achieve peace through any other means. The first line sets out the condition. If after you have analytically discerned the phenomena which are selfless, you develop the wisdom that understands the meaning of selflessness. The second line, and if you cultivate that analysis in meditation, refers to sustaining and cultivating in meditation the philosophical view of selflessness that you have gained. The third line, this will cause the result, attainment of Nirvana, means that this is the course of attaining the goal, Nirvana or liberation. Liberation is attained through cultivating the wisdom. Can you also attain liberation without the wisdom by cultivating some other path? The fourth line of this page says, there is no other path by which you can achieve such a state of peace. Meaning that even were you to cultivate another path, you would not quell suffering and the afflictions without that wisdom. Though this scripture very clearly teaches that only the wisdom of selflessness severs the roots of cyclic existence, Kamala Shila quotes it in his second stages of meditation in order to discredit the assertions of the Chinese about Huashan. Therefore, you must have certain knowledge of this. For even non-Buddhist sages have many good qualities such as concentration and the super knowledges. But since they do not have the view of selflessness, they cannot escape cyclic existence at all. The teacher himself explains clearly what he meant. Listening to others means to hear the explanation of selflessness from another person. Therefore, it is unquestionable that the Buddha spoke of the listening to others in order to refute the idea that you can develop the way of selflessness from within yourself without the study and reflection that go along with listening to an excellent external spiritual guide explain the meaning of selflessness. Generally, among all the concurrent scriptures, there are some that explicitly teach about reality, and even those that do not explicitly teach it nonetheless indirectly point toward it. The darkness of confusion is not overcome until the knowledge of reality dawns, but it is overcome when that knowledge arises. Therefore, meditative serenity, one-pointedness of mind, does not in itself become pure sublime wisdom, nor does it overcome the darkness of confusion. Hence, there is no doubt that you must seek wisdom. You should think, I will seek the wisdom that discerns the meaning of selflessness, reality, as Kamala Shila states in his second stage of meditation. Of all the perfections, it is the perfection of wisdom that knows reality. Since you cannot know it by means of meditative civilization, for the other perfections, you should develop wisdom without mistaking mere meditative civilization for the perfection of wisdom. The self of the person and the self phenomena of all the perfections. It is the perfection of wisdom that knows reality. Since you cannot know it by means of meditative stabilization or the other perfections, you should develop wisdom without mistaking mere meditative stabilization for the perfection of wisdom, as the sutra unraveling the intended meaning says. As quoted earlier, the sutra of cultivating faith in the mind also makes the same point. I do not say that those who have faith in the mind of bodhisattvas, unless their wisdom are delivered, no matter what mahayana practices they may do, relying on definitive sources. Since insight is needed, the second section concerns how to train in insight. It has four parts, fulfilling the prerequisites for insight. We should listen to the stainless textual systems relying on our scholars. I think we should stop here. Normally, when there's a bad weather, then the Tibetans normally make a holiday by saying holiday of the bad weather. So we stop here. Tomorrow, if there is a good weather, probably we can start half an hour earlier. Nagarjuna, in his fundamental wisdom, states that the action and afflictive emotions arise from conceptual thoughts, and which in turn arises from mental fabrications. And this fabrication and elaboration will cease by emptiness or into emptiness. By nature we all want happiness and we do not want sufferings. Even then we continue to suffering. As we discussed earlier, the root cause of cyclic existence is ignorance. A very ugly word in one sense. And it is through this ignorance that we encounter difficulties and problems. And now the key question is whether we can get rid of this nature of suffering. And it is possible, as we discussed also earlier, that if it is a wrong consciousness, then it can be separated and removed. Because a wrong state of mind means that it's a mind that does not correctly perceive the reality, and it is one that perceives the reality wrongly. And once you do not perceive reality correctly, then it is clear that there will be a positive counterforce. And in the case of wrong consciousness, it perceives an object wrongly because of confusion and not because it is based on reality. In the case of correct consciousness, it has a solid foundation, and therefore it is also a positive counterforce. And in the case of self-grasping, even though self-grasping is also a kind of opposite or antidote against the wisdom realizing emptiness, but because it has no solid foundation, it cannot be a factor that would be able to destroy wisdom realizing emptiness. And this clearly shows that we can put an end to afflictive emotions. And so in this verse, Nagarjuna states that by putting an end to afflictive emotions and contaminated actions, you get liberated. Meaning that afflictive emotions and contaminated actions can be eliminated by developing counterforces, and it is through this way that you get liberated from samsara, from subjection to problems and difficulties. This is so because we get entrapped within the cycle of existence because of action and afflictive emotions, and it is through the contaminated actions that we are born into this cycle of existence. And the main primary factor for our being born in the cycle of existence is what is known as the three poisons, which are ignorance, attachment and hatred, out of which the main cause is ignorance. Ignorance is not just lack of knowledge, but misconception of reality. Now what do we mean by reality? Again, in the realm of reality, there are so many different levels and types, but here we are talking about the ultimate reality, as is stated by Nagarjuna in his fundamental wisdom. and as is also taught in the wisdom realizing emptiness by Buddha himself in many sutras. And for example, in the Heart Sutra, he says that all the five psychophysical aggregates should be seen as having no independent or inherent existence, meaning that to an unenlightened perspective, we tend to perceive these five psychophysical aggregates as having independent or inherent existence. But when we search and analyze, we will find that these are only designated and therefore doesn't have inherent existence from their object sight, even though things appear to our ordinary mind as having independent or inherent existence. And therefore, ignorance, which is grasping and seeing things as having independent inherent existence, means that even though the reality of the object is such that it doesn't have inherent or independent existence, but this ignorance, which is a misconception of reality, is not only something that is confused with reality, but misconceives the reality and sees it as having inherent or independent existence. Therefore, ignorance is known as the self-grasping ignorance. So it is primarily this ignorance which is the root cause of development of afflictive emotions and contaminated actions. And these afflictive emotions and contaminated actions form conceptual thought. And conceptual thought primarily refers to self-grasping in the sense that self-grasping sees the object wrongly, and then it in turn cultivates discursive thoughts. So it is from such wild discursive thoughts that afflictive emotions and so forth arise. And so that conception, discursive thought, arises from fabrications, fabrication of self-grasping, and that fabrication of self-grasping can be put an end by the view of emptiness, by the realization of emptiness. It is in other words, through developing a correct, complete understanding of love of inherent existence. One of the primary students of Nagarjuna, Aryadeva, in his 400 works also says, just as the physical sense power pervades to all the physical body, and similarly ignorance pervades to all, meaning that among the many sense powers within one's body, for example, the eye sense power does not pervade to the whole body, the ear sense power also does not cover the whole body, but the physical sense power pervades the whole phenomena. So, like this, other individual sense powers, like the eye sense power, covers only the eye and not the whole physical body. Similarly, the other kinds of afflictive emotions like attachment, hatred, pride, doubt and so forth, they have their own limited sphere and they are just individual afflictive emotions. Whereas in the case of ignorance, it is something that pervades to all phenomena. So in the case of the meaning of self-grasping, this is very clearly mentioned and explained in the commentary of 400 verses by Aryadeva. So this ignorance pervades and influences all afflictive emotions, and therefore all these afflictive emotions can be destroyed by destroying this ignorance, which is the root of all these afflictive emotions. So if you are able to destroy this self-grasping ignorance, then all those afflictive emotions that are dependent on it is also destroyed. Now, what is the method of destroying this self-grasping? And then he says that if you see the interconnected reality or dependent arising, once you see the dependent arising, then this ignorance will not arise. And therefore, with every means, we should talk and discuss about the meaning of this interdependent origination. Because it is by seeing this interdependent origination, it is by understanding the fact that everything is merely designated, merely name, then you will be able to put an end to ignorance in the form of self-grasping. And similarly, in the same text, 400 verses by Ayadeva, he mentions, so the main meaning that he said in one verse, which I don't recall right now, is that once you see this reality of interdependent origination, in other words, everything that has an interdependent origination, that cannot have and does not have independent existence. Whatever phenomena you take into account, if it is nature is such that it is produced by depending on other causes and factors, then it can never have inherent or independent existence. And if it is something that arose by depending on causes, factors, the name that designates it and so forth, it cannot have inherent or independent existence. And therefore, since all these phenomena do not have inherent independent existence, and therefore they are interconnected and are merely designated. So whether you take into account yourself, your eye, ear, your friends, your relatives, your dharma, your teacher, all of them are same in being designated, being dependent on causes and factors, and thus having no inherent or independent existence. And the fact that everything is interconnected, independent, is not something that the Buddha has created or something that is the product of karma. It's just by law of nature. That the fact that an object arises by depending on its causes and factors, by depending on the name that designates it, it's just a law of nature. Even though this is the law of nature, but since because of our not recognizing it, we suffer. By not recognizing it, we develop afflictive emotions and so forth. And Tsongkhapa explains this meaning of interdependent origination primarily in the topic on special insight after having meditated on karma abiding or serenity. The actual cultivation of view realizing emptiness can be cultivated only after developing karma abiding. But as far as the question of hearing, thinking and meditating on emptiness is concerned, it can be done, it should be done. You should not wait until you reach the topic on special insight. So as far as the question of examining the meaning of emptiness and interconnected reality is concerned, it can be done by anybody. The analysis of that can be done by anybody, even from a non-Buddhist. So for a Buddhist, you don't really have to wait to understand meaning of emptiness until you read the section on special insight. It should be done right from the beginning. And in fact, when we talk about developing doubt towards a hidden phenomena, as soon as you develop that doubt towards the teaching of the Buddha, it is important to analyze the meaning of interdependent origination, the view of emptiness. So here we are talking not about understanding only the meaning of the word dependent origination, but the subtle meanings of dependent origination. So even before you become a Buddhist, one could reflect, and one should in fact reflect on such a meaning. And therefore, as far as the question of undertaking research and study is concerned, it should be done even before you become a Buddhist, particularly if you are someone who has sharp intelligence. And then in the case of a Buddhist practitioner, as soon as you understand, as soon as you develop devotion towards Buddha Dharma and Sangha and embrace its teaching, you should start understanding the meaning of dependent origination. And unless you develop a proper understanding of dependent origination and emptiness, it is difficult to develop a proper understanding of the meaning of true cessation of the Four Noble Truth. And particularly as far as the question of understanding of emptiness is concerned, it should be done from the point of view of the Madhyamika school of thought. Even though the meaning of interdependent origination is explained in the lower Buddhist schools of thought, but it is not complete and not comprehensive. So whether it is in terms of your development of refuge to the Buddha Dharma and Sangha, or your reliance on the teacher, or cultivation of bodhicitta, all these practices must be supported by your understanding of dependent origination and emptiness. So that's why I tell people that it will be very useful to start, in fact, from the topic on special insight for such a beginner. Earlier I sent a message by saying that some people tend to come a little bit late for the teaching and they don't get tea and bread. So I said you should offer the tea a little bit later. But you have extended it so much. But now people might be not properly listening to the teaching, but anxiously waiting for the tea and the bread. So. So now probably is the time, because it's already 9 past, so maybe the time to offer tea. Anyway, emptiness is very important. And also in this Lamrim lineage prayer, Tsongkhapa pays homage to Atisha, saying that he is the one who has thoroughly known the meaning of emptiness, and therefore I pay homage to him who is the ornament of the world. And this is true, because even though people throughout the world are not Buddhist, but what is clear is that we become unhappy because of not realizing this interconnected reality. So the key question is not whether you are a Buddhist or not, But the key question is, if you have a proper understanding of this interconnected reality, then even if you do a business, I am sure your business will be much better. For example, today we have a bright sunshine, a clear sky. And this clear sky and bright sunshine that we have here is not something that is dependent only on this local climate, local weather, but it is dependent on the environment situation of many neighboring places, dependent on the movement of the wind, falling of rain and so forth. So even in terms of all the things that you experience, they are all dependent on a collection of many causes and conditions. So whether it's in terms of environment, in terms of happiness in the society, and from a race point of view, even when you engage in a war, if you do so with a clear understanding of dependent origination, and I think it will be much better, because interconnected reality is extremely important to understand the reality. So our perception of reality is supported by understanding interconnected reality. And if you don't understand that reality, if you make a war, you will make a mistake. If you do a business, you will make a mistake. If you try to do something in the society, you make a mistake. So this view of emptiness is something that is related to all worldly affairs, and therefore one who had taught such a correct interdependent origination is definitely is the ornament of the world. And this amazing view of interdependent origination is something that must be studied by everyone. And in the case of a Buddhist, she meditates on emptiness in removing afflictive emotions. In the case of others, this is important for what you experience or how do you live in this world. As we read in many of the Asanga's texts about the interdependent origination, but the most profound and subtle meaning of emptiness is not taught in those texts of mind-only school of thought. A complete explanation of that is found in Madhyamika school of thought, where they talk about interdependent origination from the point of view of meeting and coming into contact, in terms of reliance, in terms of dependence. So the act of disintegration of a seed and the act of production of fruit, these two are very much dependent on each other. And when we talk about dependent origination in terms of dependence on its parts, then this notion of interdependent origination includes not only the conditioned phenomena, but also unconditioned permanent phenomena. And then in the case of the Prasangika Madhyamika school of thought, which doesn't accept inherent existence only at the conventional level, then according to them, that if not being satisfied with the level of appearance, if you try to discover the ultimate nature of an object without being satisfied how it is designated, then you will find that you will not be able to find anything. And this leads to the conclusion that everything is merely designated by name and terms, by the thoughts. When we say things exist merely by name, it does not mean to say that other than name there is no meaning. But when you talk about presenting that meaning, it has to be presented only through names, and therefore things exist only conventionally. And apart from that, if you search, you won't find anything from the side of the object. Now, in the case of the Savatantrika Madhyamikas, they say that it is not only mentally designated, but when you search, you should also be able to find something, an object to whom you give the designation. And therefore, but such a viewpoint has philosophical contradictions and contradictions to your own experience. And therefore, we should follow a system like Chandrakirti, who properly understands the thought of Nagarjuna and Buddhapalita, which explains clearly the meaning of interdependent origination from the point of view of the Prasangika Madhyamika. And therefore you should study a text which is complete and unmistaken. And therefore here today we are reading this great Stages of the Path by Tsongkhapa, which thoroughly explains the thought of Buddhapalita and Chandrakirti. And in order to give the transmission, explanatory transmission of this, we should realize that this is the fortunate system which comes, which is really like the fifth instruction of the Atisha and Tsongkhapa. And then you should also reflect on the important, four important features, the actual instruction which leads to relying on spiritual teacher, and having found the teacher, how you should extract the essence of human life. And in the case of extracting the essence of human life, we have studied the three individuals, the topic related to the three individuals, and then we studied also the topic on the great individual, where we studied from generation of bodhicitta, and then practicing the six perfections. And yesterday we were reading about Kamya Bhayating, and we started reading also on the special insight. And there is really not much to repeat again. Kamya Bhayating primarily means that you should let your mind focus only on the chosen topic, which is the topic of your practice and meditation, and do not allow your mind wander towards other objects which is not the chosen object. And while doing so, you should make sure, on the one hand, let the mind stay on the object, and at the same time make sure that it is not obstructed by subtle mental thinking and excitement. And when, so long as there is a risk of experiencing the obstruction of mental thinking and excitement, then you should apply antidotes. And gradually, when you develop the confidence that you are not troubled by any kind of thinking and excitement, even in their subtlest form, then you should engage in the practice of non-application of the counterforce. So in this way, you should develop the nine mental abidings, nine mental engagements. And then you actualize physical and mental pliancy. First you achieve mental pliancy, then physical bliss, and then after that, you, when you develop this stable pliancy, and then you are able to actualize one-pointed meditation, which is known as Kamya Bhayating or serenity. And it is by depending on such serenity, if you follow the worldly path, then you engage in the six mental engagements, and then actualize the concluding fruit, and then actualize the actuality of the concentration. And in this way, you actualize
second, third, fourth levels of concentration. I slipped my tongue saying fifth concentration even. This reminded me one gathering in Dharamsala, and we started counting 11, 12, 13, 14 hours and so forth, which is not the way of counting the hours in accordance with the way Tibetans count. And then you achieve the state of nothingness, where you are able to at least stop the manifestation of the collective emotions. And in order to understand the transcendental level of the path, you should know the special insight.